from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of this year's Ann Katz Festival of Books and Arts.
I'll chat with Brent Marty about the return of Miss Gulch Returns.
And I'll meet Vince Lee, the ISO's new associate conductor, and we'll have that arts calendar recall.
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. This year's Ann Katz Festival of Books and Arts kicks off on October 28th with an evening with Kenny Aronoff and continues through November 16th with events for pretty much everyone. Families with children, teens, adults, young adults, midlife adults, seniors, foodies, yoga fans, film buffs, music lovers, readers, of course, and much, much more. Sharon Gamble invited JCC Senior Vice President of Advancement and Communications, Martha Karatz, to tell us all about the Ann Katz Festival.
So this is the 17th annual festival. It has a particular significance in terms of the Katz family this year.
That's right. Sharon, this year, just last month actually, Mr. Katz, Irwin Katz, who founding partner of Katz Sapper Miller, mm-hmm. passed away at the age of 96.
Wow.
And we had named in 2000 the festival after his late wife, Anne, who was an inveterate reader, just loved books. And so it's only fitting that this year's festival we're dedicating to the memory of both Anne and Irwin Katz.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. Lovely tribute. And, you know, it has become this community jewel that everybody looks forward to, kind of like the Spirit and Place Festival every fall. It's like, oh, is it time yet? Especially if you're a reader. But I love how over the years, and this year is a great example of this, you've broadened it to, a reader, but also if you like dance, if you like yoga, if you like film, if you like food.
Right. Exactly. We are trying to broaden our audience, as lots of performing events are, and arts events. And so to do that, we wanted a little bit of something for everyone. We're kicking off the entire festival with an appearance by the famed drummer Kenny Aronoff. If people aren't familiar with him, they probably have seen him. They just didn't know that was who they were looking
right.
at. Kenny graduated from IU School of Music, Jacobs School of Music, and is a fantastic drummer and wonderful musician, and has a very interesting program called An Evening with Kenny Aronoff. And so that's really perhaps skews a little bit younger, mm-hmm. but don't shy away. He's very interesting.
You're not carding people.
No, and he's playing his drums, but he's also speaking and talking about things that will be in his book that comes out next year.
And he's worked with people from John Fogerty to B.B. King to Paul McCartney, Elton John, John Mellencamp.
You name it, yeah.
That's quite a range.
Quite a range.
So he's got stories.
Very. And he's also just a brilliant musician. Earlier that same day, there will be a masterclass for any age or ability of student or drummer or just interested musician or just interested.
Wow.
So that day you can sign up for the 4 to 5 o'clock masterclass. You can come to the event at 7:30, and that's on October 28th. That kicks off the entire event of over 3 weeks of about 20 different experiences. So you talked about Spirit in Place.
Yeah.
So the JCC, in cooperation with Dance Kaleidoscope, Indiana Writers Center, the Jewish Family Services at the Rubin Senior Center, and support from the Indiana Senior Fund, we presented a concept and won the $20,000 inaugural prize from Spirit in Place through the Senior Fund. And it's interpretation of 5 different stories by seniors, their memoirs, their a memory interpreted by Dance Kaleidoscope, and will be performed. And that takes place on Sunday, November 8th.
I love that. So there were interviews, there were how do we translate from words and memories into physical movement?
Right. And the seniors worked with Barb Shoup at the Writers' Center and helped to flesh out these ideas and help them write them, and then worked with Dance K to pick the ones that they would interpret in dance. So that's fascinating.
Lovely.
We also, a great nod to Travis and Indy Reads Books. They have their anthology, which came out last year, but we said we can't talk about writers and authors if we don't talk about Indiana authors. We have so many brilliant ones. So we worked with Travis. He picked four. And so on Tuesday, November 3rd, he will lead a panel discussion with Lou Harry, Barb Shoup, again, Dan Wakefield, and Jeff Knurick. And Jeff, who is the artist for the puzzle that people see in the paper, The Jumble, he did a special jumble just for our festival, which features the likeness of Kenny Aronoff.
I love it.
It's in our program. People can figure out, if they can't figure out the jumble, we'll tell them the answers.
That's generous of you.
So that's on Tuesday, November 3rd. And if I didn't mention, all of the events are $10 or they're free, with the exception of the Kenny Aronoff event.
And you have a special festival pass.
You do,
as
yeah.
well. So if people go on and they're like, well, gosh, I want to see a whole bunch of things.
Right. $40. And that gets you into all of the events except for the Kenny Aronoff event with the kickoff, which is $25. And we also have a program at the very end of the festival with Indiana Historical Society, and there's a fee for that. So, but still very affordable. And talk about a free program, and this is especially great if you have families, you have lots of kids, it gets very expensive to take them out. Well, come to Sousa Palooza, that's what we are calling it, on Sunday, November 1st from 2 to 4. Bring the entire family. If you love Dr. Seuss, if you love to read, if you want to see artwork from interpreted from Seuss books, we are working with Barnes & Noble, and they also help us with our book sales. And then we're working with the gallery up at the Fashion Mall, The Art of Dr. Seuss. So we'll have some artwork on exhibit.
And you're going to have a collection of unorthodox taxidermy.
Yes.
That's a little scary. Tell us about that.
It's like the heads of Seuss characters.
Oh, okay.
That could go on your wall. It's a very fun interpretation. So come to that, and again, from 2 to 4, and we're doing that in conjunction with Barnes & Noble. And then, actually, before that whole event, on October 17th, Barnes & Noble is having a book fair at Barnes & Noble.
Oh.
And a percentage of the sales from that day will help go support the book festival, and then you'll also have their featuring the authors that are being featured in our festival.
Oh, wonderful.
So you can get their current book, their back books, that sort of thing.
You know, I have to say, one of the events I'm looking forward to, I was not familiar with Tess Gerritsen, who, if you're a Rizzoli and Isles fan, you know that name, but her new book, Playing with Fire, is a fascinating story about a woman, a professional violinist, who buys an old score in an antique store in Italy. And bad things start happening when she plays the music that she finds.
And Tess herself is a violinist.
Yeah.
And she has with her another violinist who will be performing. So her name is Suzanne Howe.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of them, it'll be a wonderful presentation. So again, some author, music, a little bit for everybody. And I did want to also mention, talk about interests. I heard on this very station an interview with Terry Gross on Fresh Air back in June with an author named Michelle Goldberg.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I perked up because she was talking about a woman who is credited with bringing yoga to the West, a woman who came originally from Russia, changed her name to Indra Devi, and we are starting a new community yoga school at the JCC. So I thought, well, what a great confluence of forces.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michelle Goldberg will be present talking about her book and this woman, Indra Devi. And I think that anyone who has any interest in yoga would find this fascinating. Also, just prior to the program, we're having a one-hour yoga session. So come, have yoga, and then go to this event.
Can beginners come to that?
Absolutely. Any
cool.
level of yoga enthusiasts.
And if you're thinking, oh, I think I heard that Fresh Air interview, that book is called The Goddess Pose, The Audacious Life of Indra Devi, the woman who helped bring yoga to the West.
And so that's on Thursday, November 5th at 7 p.m. So all of our programs, generally the evening ones begin at 7, $10. I would suggest people go onto our website at jccindy.org. If they want a brochure, those came out just today, so You can stop by and pick one up. You can have one mailed to you. It's very easy to get information about this and how to buy tickets. You can also go on Eventbrite mm-hmm. and just plug in the Festival of Books at the JCC, and you can buy your tickets there.
I feel like we need to talk a little bit about the community table event, since I mentioned that there are things for foodies at this year's festival.
Well, great call. Again, another happy confluence. We heard about a book that the JCC in Manhattan had compiled, and so we reached out to the three authors and chefs. And so two out of the three are coming. I think the third one we're going to Skype in. And so then we thought, well, wait a minute. We have a farmer's market every Sunday. We have worked with Chef Jeff Bricker at Ivy Tech, who mm-hmm. runs the culinary arts program.
Yeah, he's great.
Let's do a little friendly competition. So he's putting together teams of students who are going to prepare things that, the audience can taste, and we'll do a friendly taste test and voting, and the authors are also going to vote. And we're working with, also using this as a teaching opportunity, we are a kosher facility, mm-hmm. and so the things prepared in our kitchen are kosher. So with Chef Bricker and our Mashkiach, who supervises all of our food, Rabbi Goldstein, the students are learning about preparation with kosher food and how to do that and what that means. And so it's a nice full circle of opportunities to have a teaching moment, a tasting moment, learning more about this cookbook. There are stories that go along with the recipes. So should be a lovely evening, and that's on Wednesday, November 11th.
And this might, people might read between the lines, but I need to point out that the books that we're talking about are available for purchase at the festival as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're like, ooh, that cookbook sounds good.
And generally with all of our programs, actually, there's question and answer, and then there's also autographing by the author or authors after the program. So if you have their book, bring it with you. If you want to purchase it, bring it with you. If you want to get it for a gift for the holidays, buy it and they'll sign it. And then you can give it as a signed gift.
Great
later,
timing.
Later in the year.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, a nod to WFYI. So back many years ago, WFYI produced a show called Mickey's Corner, a la Inside the Actor's Studio, but with our own Mickey Maurer, mm-hmm. and he has interviewed some very interesting folks, interesting and Indiana people, and everything from Bob Knight to Jeff Saturday to Angela Brown, and the list goes on. Well, we're bringing him back, and we're doing another Mickey's Corner, and this time he is interviewing Liz Kraft, and many people may know Liz. She worked for the Simon Property Group for over 20 years, directly for Mel and Herb, and she is telling her story of working for them. It's called Three Jews Walk Into a Shopping Center, and it's hysterical, and it's touching, and it's going to be lots of fun.
And she has to talk about people with lots of stories.
Lots of stories.
Yeah.
That's on Thursday, November 12th at 7. So we are so looking forward to that. And we couldn't do this, and of course you understand it at WFYI, you can't do it without help from the community. And so we have many, many people who make this possible,
sure.
including the National Bank of Indianapolis, the Central Indiana Senior Fund, as I mentioned, Lilly Endowment, of course, Kat Sapper Miller, Stephen and Catherine Simon, Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation, the Fifth Third Bank, Saturday Evening Post, and the list goes on and on. But we thank all of our sponsors because without them, we couldn't do this.
Sharon Gamble with Martha Karatz, Senior Vice President of Advancement and Communications for the JCC. The Ann Katz Festival of Books and Arts runs October 28th through November 16th. You can learn all about it at jccindy.org. Again, jccindy.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Actor and musician Brent Marty is returning to Theater on the Square with Miss Gulch Returns. Yes, you heard the return twice in one sentence there. It's a one-person musical comedy about Almira Gulch from The Wizard of Oz. Travis DiNicola spoke with Marty about the show and his role in its development.
Brent, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Oh, thanks, Travis. Pleasure to be here.
So you are bringing Miss Gulch back. Miss Gulch returns, and she's going to be at the Theater on the Square.
That's correct. She is returning in all her glory. Brace yourselves.
So help me understand the story. I mean, this is like the The Poor Man's Wicked?
That, you know, that's not a bad way to put it, Travis. Well, everybody knows, well, I assume everyone knows who Ms. Gulch is. She certainly
remind us.
Assumes everyone knows who she is. She is the bike-riding Harridan who comes riding in, that's right, that immortal theme song in The Wizard of Oz to take away Toto.
Oh.
And this is her, sort of her side of the story, because we see her in that movie. We see her in the first 10 minutes, and then we don't hear from her again because she turns into the Wicked Witch of the West. So this is Almira's angle on how that went down and other things in her sordid
Almira
life.
Gulch.
Almira Gulch. Yeah.
So, and she, let me see if I got the premise here right. She's actually an actress in the sort of the concept here is that she is an actress in real life and just happens to be in this movie.
Right. Yeah. She was hired to do that. She talks about how she also did the screen test for Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, she was hot that year and they needed a mean lady, but they didn't cast her and it was fine because they didn't let her sing her song, which is what happened in The Wizard of Oz. They didn't let her sing her song. And if everybody else got to sing their song, if I had sung my song, people would be, she says, flamboyant men would be putting on dresses and impersonating me to this day. So, you know.
And it's funny how it all comes around.
Yep.
So she has been wronged.
Well, yeah, she has been wronged, and she's been in and out of love, and she just feels the need to share this with the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what she does.
And this is a one woman, one man.
Yes.
One man as a woman show.
Yes, in our, you know, in today's society, non-gender specificity.
Yes, yes.
So,
one
yeah, it's me, and I start out as me. Mm-hmm. I start out as, it's in the script, it's called not Miss Gulch or something, I can't remember, or Miss Gulch to be, the Miss Gulch to be. And then before the audience's very eyes, I transform into her.
Wow.
So it's worth seeing just for that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Let alone the brilliant, you know, songs and script that that Fred Barton did.
Now, you've done this show before, right?
I did. I did it back. I originally did it in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And then we brought it back twice more after that. We did it again in 2011 and then in 2013, I believe, or 2012 and 2013.
Okay.
And anyway, the last time was 2013.
Always at
2003. Oh, my gosh. I'm so out of it. 2003.
Now, has it always been at Theater on the Square?
It was at Theater on the Square the first time.
Mm-hmm.
The second time we did it in the space that is now Comedy Sports.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That was before Comedy Sports was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we brought it back to Theater on the Square in 2003.
Very fun. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been a little while.
Yeah, you're telling me. getting back on the bike has been quite an experience.
Literally on the bike.
Literally.
Do you get to ride a bike on the bike?
I'm not going to give that away.
Okay.
Come and see.
Obviously, but I mean, you love this show.
It was special to me then, and it was special enough, obviously, to audiences. We brought it back a few times. And it, you know, it's just a fun take on something. And at that time, Wicked was opening on Broadway. It opened in 2003. So there was a renewed interest. However, there's always interest in The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
It is a timeless, it is part of our nation's cultural heritage. And so people identify with it. They want to see spinoffs. They want to see things that have to do with it.
Wasn't it like always on Sunday nights, like once a year
around Easter or something? Yes, Thanksgiving, Easter.
Right,
That's brought up in the script as well.
Okay.
Yes, how repeated gulch exposure in the early formative years is not such a great thing. So it's a favorite of mine, and I'm happy to be able to bring it back, especially back to Theater on the Square, where it originated, even though we are now doing it in stage two. So it'll be a little bit more intimate experience.
It will be, yes.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yes.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Tell me about some of the songs.
Oh yes. Well, she sings I can't say the name of the one song on the air.
Okay.
I'm a blank. That's the song that was cut from The Wizard of Oz that she needed to sing for obvious reasons. Yeah. But the rhymes, the score was written by a gentleman named Fred Barton.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of New York City. He's done a lot of work here in Indianapolis. He did several arrangements for the Indianapolis Symphony on their Yuletide.
Okay.
So he's known around the country for that, his orchestral arrangements. But he wrote this show as a sort of a tribute to Margaret Hamilton, who he was somewhat obsessed with, I guess, in his early years. And she played Almira Gulch in the film. And
the real Margaret Hamilton.
Yes, correct. The real Margaret Hamilton who portrayed Almira Gulch. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, he's a genius songwriter. There are double, triple entendre going on in these songs. So they're great fun just to sit and listen to, you know, and they're fun to perform, even though sometimes they're terribly tricky. Mm-hmm. So there's that. She sings her signature song, "Born." I was born on a bike in West Topeka.
Mm-hmm.
which is a ripoff of Judy Garland's, you know, Born in a Trunk, obviously.
Sure, sure.
She goes on, she sings a song called Pour Me a Man, which has become sort of a cabaret standard in the cabaret world, talking about how equating men to various liquors. later on she sings about the love of her life, Joe, a man named Joe. We never find out any more about him except that his name was Joe, and she was completely and madly in love with him, and then he dumped her. So this is the premise of her, you know, why she's so much the way she is.
She's a little bitter.
She's bitter. She is terribly bitter and pinched. Pinched and bitter and frustrated. So she sings a song, you know, about how all the men she knows run off with blondes on their arms, you know, the typical stereotypical thing. Mm-hmm. But it's really clever. It's very clever.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So why did you choose to do it in the first place?
Okay, this is a good backstory. I'm glad you asked me that. So one day,
yes,
back when you had to go to the library to check out CDs before mm-hmm. you could get music online, for those of you under the 30-year-olds out there.
Or check out record albums.
Yeah. I was downtown at the Central Library, and I was just thumbing through the CDs, and I came across this CD, Miss Gulch Returns, and there was a picture of Fred Barton on the cover dressed as Almira Gulch, and I thought, oh, that looks like me. You know, hello. So I picked it up, I took it home, I listened to it, and I immediately, you know, fell for it just because of the material. It was great, you know, as I was mentioning. And then I was actually doing my second production of The Wizard of Oz with the Indianapolis Civic Theater, where I now am employed, and now the Booth Tarkington Civic Theater, and they do The Wizard of Oz all the time, and we just happened to be in the middle of that run, and I got a phone call from someone at Theater on the Square. The show they were planning to do, they couldn't do because the costumes weren't going to be there, the rental was falling through. I had given the CD to Ron Spencer.
Okay, at Theater on the Square,
yes,
right?
And I'd said, hey, Ron, would you ever even think about something? Listen to this, it's hilarious. And he did, and he thought, oh, yeah, that's fun. So I got a call. Would you come in? Let's produce Miss Gulch in lieu of that other show that we're not going to be able to do. And I said, are you kidding? Yes.
You had, like, what, a couple days to do it?
Oh, a little more than that. But I think that would have been December, and we put the show up in February, I think. So.
Okay.
But it was awesome, and Ron did a brilliant job directing it, and Fred Barton actually came to see it, and he brought his mother, so this is an endorsement, right?
Right.
So he was it was the first time it had been staged. When he wrote it to be performed from the piano. He's also a brilliant pianist.
So it had not been staged before?
It had not been fully staged, and so we took it, and that's what we did to it. And actually, there are now elements in the script. The new version of the script, which I'm working with now, has parts that we actually added in when we did the full staging
because it made sense.
Yes. So now it's been performed a few times around the country at various night spots, I think. I don't know. I know there's been a production in New Orleans. There was a recent production in Baltimore, I think. And Fred has taken it to London, where he's done it from the piano again. But it's exciting to get it up on its feet.
That's really cool. I mean, that you've had the opportunity to work with Fred Barton on this and that actually influenced the production.
Yeah. It's cool.
That's very cool. I did not realize that. Awesome.
There we are.
Yeah, and there you are. So this time around now, are you directing yourself? Or
nope.
How's that working?
Nope. Zach Nidich, who is a local director, he's been on the scene a little while now. He's directed some things with Zach Rosen Productions and the Fringe Festival. He's directing. He sent me an email and said, I want to do this. And I said, I said, it's not just about directing this piece, you know, it's about also dealing with me, because it's a one-man show. And he said, yes, I'll take it on. I said, bully, let's do it.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, and so we're having a great time with it.
That's
yeah.
very cool. Mm-hmm. Now, and anything new that you're adding to it?
There's a new song, for starters. There are, as I mentioned, a new element of the script. There's a new song called I Can Be an Icon Too, where she talks about how there are all these other fabulous leading women in the world, these iconic female figures, and she should be one too. You know, if Dolly Parton can build Dollywood, why can't I build Almira Land?
Of course.
You know? So it's great. It's another tongue-twisting song, but it'll be really fun.
Well, that's awesome. That's very cool. Looking forward to seeing it. Sounds like it's going to be
all of you there in Radioland in the audience. Almira can't wait.
Hey, before I let you go, of course, you mentioned earlier that your day job is with the Civic Theater.
Yes.
And what's going on up there?
Oh, thanks. Booth Tarkington Civic Theater. We're up in Carmel at the Center for the Performing Arts. Mm-hmm. On the same night that Miss Gulch opens, actually, we are opening a production of The Games Afoot, which is a fun murder mystery by Ken Ludwig. Was at the IRT a couple of years ago, if you remember.
Great goofy script.
Yep. Then at holiday time, we're bringing Mary Poppins.
Okay.
This is the first time it's been produced here by a community theater, and we are excited to bring that to the stage. We just cast it. It's going to be great. Huge production, lavish production. And then we're following that up with Doubt in February.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to be doing in February a sing-along Sound of Music with the film.
Uh-huh.
So that'll be exciting for us. And then closing out the season with Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, great. One of my favorite shows.
Yeah, and that was the first one I ever did at Civic back in 1990-something. I won't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But so it'll be a little full circle moment for me. I'm really looking forward to that.
Nice. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Well, break a bicycle spoke?
Yeah.
Gold?
Yes, break a broomstick, you know.
There you go.
Say what you want.
Well, thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter today.
Thank you, Travis. Almira looks forward to seeing you.
Travis DiNicola with Brent Marty, who's starring in the show Miss Gulch Returns at Theater on the Square. The show runs from October 23rd through November 8th, and you can get more information as well as tickets at tots.org, tots.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I know what you're doing this weekend because you're such a huge baseball fan, but I think if you listen to that calendar that we call What'll We Do? We'll have some ideas to lure you away from watching baseball and give you a little break.
Fair enough.
Before you wear out your voice yelling at the screen. Poor thing.
Well, the first thing that I want to do is give a big congratulations to Emily Kinnert.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was so thrilled.
Yeah. So Emily is a local artist. She was, in fact, she had a solo show at the IMA a few years back. And most recently was selected by the panelists through the IMA to represent Indianapolis at Art Prize in Grand Rapids, which is the single largest art prize event in the world. And I've been fortunate to go up there the past few years, taking a tour group from the IMA's Contemporary Art Society. Last year, Anila Aga won both the public vote and split the juried vote, and Anila got a huge prize. Last year, we've had her on Art of the Matter. Well, Emily was the only artist this year to be a finalist both in juried and public vote, and she ended up winning the public vote for a time-based work. So she didn't win the big $200,000 prize, but she still got a very lovely prize, and lots of great recognition for her work, Whisper, which is a really cool piece that uses sound activated from a microphone, whispering into a microphone, to move the settings on, it's about an 80-foot dining room table. It was just a great installation. People were having so much fun whispering into the microphone and trying to make it move so that plates would crash and glasses would fall off. And anyways, congratulations to Emily on that. That's very cool.
Somehow that seems timely as we get towards Thanksgiving and those other holidays where all your family comes to see you.
You know, that could give a whole new meaning to Thanksgiving.
It could indeed.
Emily should sell those tables for Thanksgiving dinners.
Oh, my gosh. Emily, are you listening? I bet we have her on to talk more about her art soon.
I think we
shall. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. So speaking of holidays, a holiday coming up even sooner is just a couple of weeks away, as you know if you listened to our calendar recently. We have some Halloween-themed things coming up, including a play coming up at the Phoenix. I want to remind you, this is your last weekend to see One Man, Two Governors. But starting next week, you get the chance to enter the world of the Nether, a virtual paradise of total sensory immersion. Wow, that's kind of connected to Emily's piece, isn't it? Log in, choose an identity, and indulge your every whim. And this is obviously a futuristic play, sci-fi thriller about a battle over technology and human desire. And that opens October 22nd, runs to November 22nd. The playwright's Jennifer Haley, an up-and-coming playwright, and The Nether will be on stage at the Phoenix Theater.
Very cool. Well, I guess I'm still thinking of art festivals, and now I'm thinking about food. And I know that this isn't quite Art Prize, but Knoxville, Tennessee does have the International Biscuit Festival.
Biscuit Festival!
Yes, and they are having, as part of their 2016 International Biscuit Festival, an art exhibition during the month of May, and they have a call out now for artists. Yes, that's right. If you want to create 2D or 3D biscuit-themed art, then you can do so and participate in the Biscuit Festival's art exhibit, next May in Knoxville. So if you're an artist, I'm really not making this up.
I've read it independently.
And you will find the information on how to enter.
And if Indiana artists get in there, Travis, we got to organize a road trip.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A road trip. Knoxville's a lovely town. But I don't know their association with biscuits, but hey, everybody's got to have a thing, right? The cows on parade in Chicago was a thing.
Gravy Fest afterwards.
Yeah, there we go. So we promised you something spooky. How about Hoosier Haunts, presented by Candlelight Theater at the President Benjamin Harrison Home? You get a chance to go through all three floors of the mansion, and there will be close-up encounters with legendary Hoosier ghosts just dying to share their spooky tales with you. There are student price tickets, so it must not be super, super scary. But if you have questions, you can always contact the President Benjamin Harrison Home, 317-631-1888, 317-631-1888, or presidentbenjaminharrison.org. By the way, this is the last weekend to see this scary production.
It should be fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm still on a food theme. And imagining
are
what,
you hungry? Should we make
you
some
maybe that's what it is.
A meal?
Chocolate Fest is Saturday from noon to 4 at the Dallara IndyCar Factory out in Speedway. It benefits Arts for Learning. 22 different Indiana vendors are going to be out there, as well as a whole bunch of other fun activities for kids, arts activities, and cool stuff at the Dallara Factory. And it is just a great event. Go out there, buy your tickets, and eat lots of chocolate to support Arts for Learning. Noon to 4 at Dallara on Saturday the 17th.
I'm reaching over so you can twist my arm. Mm-hmm. Hey, so right after Halloween comes Dia de los Muertos, November 1st. And boy, you're going to, if you love music, you're going to have to make some choices or clone yourself, or maybe you're going to drive quickly among venues, because here are three things you can do that day. At 3 o'clock that day, Garrick Olson is performing at Indiana Landmark Center. This is part of a partnership between the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra and American Pianists Association, you heard about on The Art of the Matter a few weeks ago. Repertoire has not been announced yet, but it's Garrick Olson and a Steinway 9-foot D piano in great acoustics in Grand Hall at Indiana Landmark Center. So how could you go wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
At 5 o'clock, Encore Vocal Arts opens its season officially with a Dia de los Muertos concert. There are pre-show activities at 4 o'clock to the sounds of a mariachi band, face painting, sugar skull making, and more. Family-friendly concert. And then at the Palladium, the Bollywood Masala Orchestra. Don't be scared by orchestra, because it's very, very lively. Not that orchestras can't be lively, but this is not your grandmother's orchestra. We'll just say that. So check out the websites of each of those organizations to find out more and make your choices.
Very cool. I've got some more stuff for Saturday. Modus, the modern dance company Modus, is having an open house at their new location at the Basile Opera Center up at 40th and Pennsylvania. And they are doing this from 1 to 3 on Saturday. And you can come in for a mini sample class, and there'll be kids' activities, and check out their new space, which is just beautiful and a great place for them to be able to have their classes for Modus, 1 to 3 on Saturday.
Coming up very soon, and there'll be an interview to give you a little sneak peek of one of the events, but very soon, November 6th through the 15th, is the Spirit in Place Festival. Can you believe it? It's 20 years this year. They take their theme from a line by Carl Sandburg, "Nothing happens unless first a dream." Dream is the theme of all these Spirit in Place events going on throughout the city, November 6th through the 15th. More about that in upcoming shows.
Very cool. There is still an opportunity to go see Optical Popsicle Infinity at the IMA. It's their show that they're bringing there, the artist group in residence at the IMA, and they're performing on Saturday the 17th at both 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. Great for the whole family. It's a visual variety extravaganza with comedy, film, dance, puppetry, and popsicles.
All right. I can't begin to do justice by mentioning just a couple of the films of the Heartland Film Festival. So I'll just say go to heartlandfilmfestival.org, because it opens this weekend and goes for a full week of films that stay with you, films that move you, films that might even change your life. So Heartland Film Festival, go support them.
Last thing I've got, Sharon, is Indie Hub is again doing the Passport to the Arts. And this is a passport you buy and you end up saving about 40% off of tickets. And this year, the passport includes the Symphony Orchestra with their classic FM Radio Hits concert, Phoenix Theater's Very Phoenix Xmas, IRT's To Kill a Mockingbird, Dance Kaleidoscope's Voices of a Generation, and a special secret tour of the IMA, all on the passport for the arts at Indie Hub.
Fantastic.
Yeah, they sell out fast. So
yeah,
yes,
they do.
Worth getting now.
Hop on those. And if any of you plan to dress up like Travis or me for Halloween, please let us know and, you know, Instagram it or send us a photograph. And we want to remind you that there are so many more things going on than we can possibly tell you about, but you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. The Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. And you can also learn more on our calendar next week, and we call that What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra recently appointed Vince Lee as its new associate conductor. Maestro Lee has served on the cover conducting staff of the Philadelphia Orchestra and has held several other assignments with high-profile ensembles, including serving as the assistant conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra and the Cincinnati May Festival. As a champion of modern compositions, he has premiered more than 200 works to date, and Indiana is quite familiar to him since he earned his conducting master's from IU's Jacobs School of Music. Sharon Gamble welcomed Maestro Lee to our city and our studios recently. Let's meet him.
What led you to conducting?
Oh, that's such a great question. My whole life, it's been a very interesting, unique, twisty path in the road of music.
Really?
And all the trouble started at age 5, when I asked for piano lessons for my birthday.
Wait. Really?
Yeah.
Your parents didn't foist them on you. You asked for them. What led you there?
Well, to make the story short and compact, I have an older brother and older sister, mm-hmm. and they had class piano at the schools that they went to.
Mm-hmm.
And so at a very young age, I was very fascinated by the piano. So I was around 3 years old, and I actually have a very vivid memory of this. My sister, I was messing around on the piano, mm-hmm. and my sister told me that I was not allowed to play piano unless I had lessons. So I just stopped playing, and my parents thought that I had lost interest. You know, toddlers will have various interests.
Yeah, sure.
So after messing around with the piano for months and months, I just stopped. They didn't realize the reason why I stopped is because my sister told me I wasn't allowed to play.
How much older is your sister?
She's 4 years older.
But she had a great air of authority when she said this to you.
No, as a three-year-old, you're going to believe things that people tell you. It makes sense. But when we would take my older brother and sister to school, we would drive by this music lessons shop.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sign in the window that said piano lessons. And I would see that sign twice a day going mm-hmm. to and from school. And by happenstance, when my mom was asking me what I wanted for my birthday, we were driving by that music store, and I said, piano lessons. So that's how that all came.
And they accommodated you.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And it was such a dream. I still remember the very first lesson, playing the white keys in clusters and playing the black keys in clusters. Mm-hmm. It was an absolute thrill, and it still is a thrrill many years later.
Now, I'm curious, there's a piano in your home. Were there other instruments in your home?
No, just piano. Okay. And my brother and sister both played, I think my sister played saxophone and my brother played trombone in the band, but they lost interest sort of midway through high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the only musical person in the family, sort of the oddball in that aspect.
Piano is a I've never been a conductor, but I would assume it would be a great foundation instrument for being a conductor, because you're reading multiple clefs at the
yes.
same time. You're paying attention to a lot of things going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think many years ago, the golden age of conducting, you know, so many of those famous conductors got their start in the opera house, in the
mm-hmm.
opera pit.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a very distinct ladder that you would climb from you know, a chorus master or coach to repetiteur, then assistant conductor, pianist for these rehearsals. So it used to be that piano was a necessity, and especially, you know, back before technology. Nowadays, you can just push a button and have access to so many things.
It was the radio in your home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was one of the most accessible, immediate ways that you could hear a score. How it fits together is by sitting down at the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So nowadays, you have a lot more conductors who don't have so much of a piano background. But yeah, it is very, very helpful in so many ways.
Do you still play?
Yes. I have not played as much the past 10 years or so as I used to,
mm-hmm.
But I still keep active. And actually, at age 15, I got very interested in playing popular music piano, rock, R&B, music theater. So from a performance standpoint, that's my specialty. But at the same time, when I went to school at Juilliard, I was the principal pianist for the Juilliard orchestras. And so that really kept me in line. And then actually part of my responsibilities here, I'll be playing piano for some of the rehearsals behind the scenes when singers come in.
Oh, sure.
For instance, we'll be doing it's Berg's 7 Early Songs. And so I'm slated to be playing piano for the rehearsals for that before we get with the orchestra. And then for the Carmen coming up in June, which, by the way, I'm so thrilled about. It's my favorite opera. Love it so much. I'll be playing for the rehearsals for Christoph behind the scenes as well. And so not only is that good just to be involved behind the scenes with a project that I'm assisting, but also it's good to keep my fingers in line and,
right.
and keep my knife sharp.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you when you get a new score, obviously as a conductor, you can look at it and hear it all in your head. But does getting a new score ever send you to the piano?
No, that's also a very interesting question. I found every conductor has a completely different method of digging into a score.
Hmm.
And it's very interesting, but for some reason, I do very little piano work, actually, when I study
mm-hmm.
a score.
Mm-hmm.
If I get a piece that's brand new, especially by modern composers,
right.
the first thing that I'll do is I will go through it page by page with just me and the score,
mm-hmm.
Just looking at the texture, the design, and then I'll go through a second time and see if there are things that I catch that second time around that I didn't catch the first time. And usually that's when my pencil will get active. If there's something I see that second time around that I missed, there must be something to it. And so I'll make a mark for future reference. But yeah, I do very little piano work, interestingly, which is strange being a pianist.
Yeah.
But it's, for some reason, never really been a major part of my studies.
So it's a big jump from playing an instrument to wanting to conduct a whole bunch of instruments. Tell us about that journey.
Yes. So again, just it's an
no,
epic
tell
story
the long
with,
oh, story. No. We want to know.
we will be here an hour because there's so many like epic happenstance things
really?
That all led to it. But just giving the summary in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I used to be a stage performer as a kid. Actually, at age 9, my first opera was Carmen. Absolute blast. And then at age 13, there was a performing arts school that I attended. And
where did you grow up?
Cincinnati was my hometown.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So there's a performing arts school in town. I went there from 4th through 12th grade. And so at age 13, whenever a teacher would be ill or would miss a class, a choir or an instrumental ensemble, instead of having a substitute come in and give a study hall for the day,
mm-hmm.
the teacher would leave a note to say, could Vince take this rehearsal?
Really?
And so I started getting rehearsal experience at around age 12 or 13. And the first opera chorus that I ever prepared was at age 13 for another production of Carmen.
And Carmen's following you around.
Yes. In fact, Cincinnati Opera has had no idea that a 13-year-old had prepared their boys' chorus. But it was a huge success. It went very, very well. And they only found out many years later when I went back to Cincinnati as their assistant conductor. So I had gotten involved in music leadership, I guess is the best way to summarize that, at age 12 and 13. And then the match that really lit the fire, I worked with the Cincinnati Pops on a number of occasions. I did their Sound of Music album with Friedrich von Stade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I met Eric Kunzel. Who, of course, conducted the Indianapolis Pops for many years. So he took me under his wing, and at age 13, I made my debut conducting the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra.
Wow.
And even the story that led to that is a crazy domino effect. But during a previous concert, it was actually a Disney album with the Singing Hoosiers, who performed on it, the May Festival Chorus of Cincinnati. And again, long story very short, the final concert during the encore, he wades through the sea of individuals on stage. You've got all the Singing Hoosiers, all the kids' chorus, all the May Festival chorus.
Mm-hmm.
He grabs me, puts me on his shoulders, goes up to the podium, and hands me the baton.
No.
Just a funny little shtick thing. But then that gave him an idea. I wonder what would happen if I gave Vince an actual piece. And this story I'll tell because it's amazing how the tiniest thing can completely change your life.
Yeah.
So the piece I was conducting was an arrangement of the Orange Blossom Special, which actually Time for Three just played yesterday at our community day. And being very honest, and this was, I'm sure, part of Eric's thoughts, you could literally grab anybody off the street and give them 5 minutes of instruction, and they're going to be just fine. Just go up and beat 1-2, 1-2. It's not going to be a problem. So I go to the rehearsal, and I'm, of course, very excited because I've dug into this piece, and it had been my dream to conduct for so long. But look, you don't see kid conductors. You see kid pianists. You see kid singers.
Yeah.
But the dream of a conductor as a kid was completely just unthinkable because you don't see kids conducting.
Right.
So I never really gave it much serious thought. Well, here I am at age 13 about to conduct the Cincinnati Symphony on this Orange Blossom Special. So I'm going to conduct the stuffing out of it. So the one piece of advice Eric gives me is no matter what happens at rehearsal, don't stop. Because basically he wants me to go up and just go through it. It's going to be fine. Well, Philip Ruder was the concertmaster at the time, and he had a separate fiddle part. And the design of the piece was you have the A section, which repeats, B section repeat, C section repeat, DS Alcoda, go back to the beginning straight through.
Mm-hmm.
The concertmaster was missing all of his repeats for his solo fiddle part.
Uh-oh.
So we get to the end of the A section, and the orchestra repeats. But Mr. Ruder goes to section B, and now he's playing in a completely different key. We have Ives instead of Carmen Dragon, who was the arranger. But Eric gave me one instruction. Don't stop. So, and of course, as a 13-year-old kid, I don't realize that I could just stop conducting. They're going to keep playing without me. So I'm still beating two, and I start waving my left hand trying to get Eric's attention. But he's off stage left talking with the orchestra manager. He's not even paying attention.
You would think that the dissonance might call him back into the room.
Well, that's actually what happened. He heard that something wasn't quite right, and then he saw me frantically waving. So he stops the orchestra. And, of course, for those people that know Eric, he can't resist the moment of comedy. So he comes up and puts his hands on his hips and he says, "What did you do to my orchestra?"
broke them.
The thing is, I know exactly what happened, but, I mean, the concertmaster is right there. He is
and
one foot away.
And he's a grown up and you're a kid.
Yeah, and also, and I had seen him play many concerts and really liked him. So, and look, you know, first time conducting a major ensemble, you don't know that part of your job is, you should say there's something that went wrong. So I'm trying to whisper to Eric, well, we got to measure 13 and the concertmaster, he skipped to measure 14 and the orchestra went back, they took the repeat to measure 5. And so Eric says, well, here, let's look at the score. So he reaches for the score, but the score's not on the podium. The score's on the ground because I had the piece memorized.
Aww.
So he gives me a look. He picked, or back then what I thought was memorizing. Of course, you know, as you grow as a conductor, you figure out how much you didn't know years ago. So he picks up the score. He looks, and he looks at the concertmaster's part, and he sees that the repeats are missing. So he writes in all the repeats. He puts the score back on the ground and says, Vince, why don't you take that from the top again? And now Eric is right behind me, you know, his arms crossed, and he watches me the entire time. And so because of that missing repeat, that led to a series of events which showed him that, this wasn't me just coming up and just going to beat this two pattern, that I took it seriously. I end up guest conducting the Cincinnati Pops 7 times over the course of the next 8 years. Just about every season he'd give me a piece to conduct. And these were pieces that were a lot more meaty, that weren't just, you know, a 2-4 thing. But that's what led to the conducting mentorship. And again, all the dominoes still continue to fall today. But that's, again, one of many epic stories that led me to where I am.
How did you stay so modest?
I don't know if there's a good way to answer that question. Because the thing is, I will say, as a conductor, as you grow, you learn all the things you didn't know years ago. But also at the same time, you get more confident in the things that you're very good at. And so, look, as a kid, especially as a theater kid, you get thrown into so many unexpected situations. And, I mean, I don't know if I was necessarily modest back then. You know, I certainly knew all the things that I needed to get better at. But I also knew the things that I was quite confident at as well. I guess maybe a better answer is, from a conducting standpoint, especially watching conductors like Eric work with ensembles, that you get a really good view of the bigger picture and what your role is as a conductor. And that's something that I'm still learning, the ways that you can be helpful and effective. But no, back then it was just an adventure, I guess. I mean, I was just focused on the moment and going there and doing a job and making a positive difference on the podium. But I tell you, that experience was so invaluable in so many different ways. And Eric, too, he got a big kick out of it as well. In fact, I remember the third time that I guest conducted, he was talking with some of the guest artists that were doing the performance. And one of them came up to me afterwards and she's like, you know, Eric was talking with us about how all this happened with you. At the time, I was 15. And the thing that Eric said is, you know, the funniest thing? Vince could actually do this right now for real in terms of, you know, the duties of the musical duties of what, you know, Pops conductors do, putting things together and such. But yeah, it was a combination of luck and hard work and the craziest random things that all came together and gave me those opportunities. But it's a big foundation of who I am today.
Sharon Gamble with Vince Lee, the ISO's new associate conductor. He will conduct the orchestra in family concerts, discovery concerts for elementary school children, Marsh Symphony on the Prairie, and other performances during the summer season. Lee will also assist Urbanski and all guest conductors as a cover conductor for the classical subscription weeks. He will make his ISO debut on October 25th, the first concert of the Symphony Sundays series, and it has a Halloween theme, Symphonic Spooktacular. But it's quite family-friendly. You can learn more at IndianapolisSymphony.org. Again, IndianapolisSymphony.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I get to talk with Dr. Jim Glass about an upcoming architecture talk.
I'll chat with author Dan Wakefield about the re-release of his book, Under the Apple Tree.
And I'll get a sneak peek of the Gustav Bauman exhibit at the IMA, and we'll have that arts calendar we call What Do We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.